Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, you seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 The Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, you're going to make it happen.
And Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley, along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your texts, your voicemails, anything you got for us. This is going to be a pretty somber episode of Locked On Bulls, and welcome back from the weekend. You probably all already know, but if you don't know already, Kobe Bryant, one of the legends of the NBA, recently retired over the last few years. He has passed away in a helicopter accident over the weekend. A huge, huge, huge shock to the entire NBA world, and not just the NBA world, but I think the way he touched so many people's lives, it extended across a bunch of different industries. But it was a truly sad day yesterday watching everything unfold, Matt. Not necessarily the way we wanted to end the weekend or really even start the year. You know, we've lost two really, really important people now in the NBA just in the course of this last month to start 2020, and David Stern and Kobe Bryant. But how are you and how you doing?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, it certainly was a tough end to the weekend, no doubt about that. You know, you mentioned the passing of David Stern that, you know, started this new decade of NBA basketball, and at least that is something that we could, you know, grapple with a bit more easily because the man lived a long and full life and was sort of, you know, going through, well, like people had time to prepare for it because he suffered, you know, something with his health and then was still around for a couple of weeks after it happened. And that gave not only his family and friends, but the NBA community some time. Kobe's death is so shocking that I didn't, I'm sure like many, believe it. You know, I was having myself a lazy Sunday afternoon, chilling in bed, and the news came across my phone, and I had to believe that it was a hoax, because, and much like MJ was and still is to all of us, you know, Bulls fans, and you know, we could talk about the whole MJ Kobe relationship later if you want to, but there are certain people who feel like they are not human beings, that they have built such a insanely humongous legacy for whatever it is that they have accomplished with their lives and touched all of the people that appreciate their greatness, that they seem immortal in some way. And when somebody who we all believe to be immortal shockingly dies at a young age, that's why you can't comprehend it. I was hanging out with my Outsiders buddies, John and Big Dave, yesterday, and we were all kind of talking through how we've tried to process it. And John brought up the fact that, like, it's the most shocking celebrity death since Princess Diana. And there have been plenty of shocking celebrity deaths, but I think he was right. Like, I was trying to think of other celebrity deaths that seemed so implausible that they couldn't be real since Princess Di. It's just so sad. And more than anything, I'm heartbroken for his family, for his wife, for his other daughters. I mean, it's just hard to think about the fact that Kobe's gone and his daughter Gigi's gone with him.
Yeah, it is definitely difficult to kind of grasp, and I'm with you too. I was at my other job and somebody came up to me and they're like, "You probably already heard the news." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And they're like, "Yeah, Kobe Bryant just passed away in a helicopter accident," and they're flipping through all these news stories on their phone, and I'm like, I'm like, that's not funny. Like, that's not a funny joke. I was like, are you serious? And I had to get my phone out and like check five different sources. And finally I saw Woj's tweet and I'm like, holy shit. You brought up the fact that you're not sure what celebrity death seemed most shocking. I'm a little younger than you are. So to me, I can still remember where I was, like the exact spot I was when somebody told me Michael Jackson died. And I felt like that was a big one for a lot of people here. But this, to me, I think is far and above. I mean, you look at everywhere. You look at any social media, you open up any platform today, and the first thing you see is Kobe tribute from somebody, whether it's somebody that's verified and it's a journalist, or it's somebody with 12 followers that watched the NBA, you know, their whole lives. Anywhere you go, anything, any platform you turn on, any medium you watch tonight, you're going to see it. You're going to see nothing but Kobe in remembrance of him, and you just see how many people he touched and how many stories he was able to provide for a lot of these people that we never heard of, you know, like his relationship with Trae Young. I mean, his relationship with Doc Rivers, all these people that he was so close with, that broke down in tears yesterday. And it was really difficult to try to sort through all of these different people. I was at the Score too last night, and sorting through all this audio of all of these people talking about Kobe, it was definitely a somber moment. And you know, just listening to all these people reflect on his career and his life and what he was doing, the same theme I've kept getting from every single person was he seemed to be enjoying life after basketball and finding a next career path. And that really, really made him happy. And I think that's just, it's truly sad to hear that too.
Yeah. I mean, the guy was a retired NBA player who then decided, oh, I want to be this and I want to be this and I want to be this. I want to be an author. I want to be a storyteller. I want to be a filmmaker, all these things, winning an Oscar, you know, writing stories, writing books. And it's the same level of competitive drive. And it's, I can't remember which one of the many columns. I think it may have been Jackie Max, which is great. And by the way, just go read every great journalist's columns about the passing of Kobe, because it gives you an appreciation for how important sports writing still is today. But someone saying to him soon after he had retired, like, hey, man, like, slow down, take a breath, enjoy your retirement. And Kobe's response was, nah, no way, can't do that. He left the game of basketball and he knew that he left it in good hands and was happy to step away from that and try something new, try to be great at something else, whatever it was that spoke to him. And that to me is another way in which the Kobe Michael comparison is, I think, so spot on, because it's about the competitive drive and the insistence to never stop working. Whatever your goal is, whatever your current goal is, you do not stop working. You drive yourself and you drive the people around you crazy with your insistence upon not stopping whatever that is that drives you. And that's, I think, why, you know, as a young Bulls fan watching MJ, and then growing through all of my, you know, youthful and into my adult years, finding those figures who are as competitive as MJ, and why MJ is always referred to as the GOAT, and it was about his insistence to win, his desire to win, his desire to always get better. I don't think anybody came close to matching that except for Kobe, and Kobe came pretty damn close.
I think another thing, too, to think about is the fact that his work ethic, just going off of that, you know, I was listening to Jim Boeheim, who was his assistant coach on all those Team USA teams, and I was listening to him talk about stories about Kobe of, you know, what he used to do and why it separated him from so many other players that he had coached, and so many great players, too. Think about Jim Boeheim's career. I mean, he's been at Syracuse, I think, 60 years. He's been coaching for his entire life, and he talked about Kobe in a different way than he talked about any other player that I've ever heard. He brought up a story where he would say, yeah, we got to China, and LeBron was on that team. Carmelo Anthony was on that team, and he said Kobe would get up at 3 a.m. in the morning and he would do a two-hour workout. We'd go to practice for 4 hours. He'd have another two-hour workout scheduled. He'd take a bit of a break, and then he'd be back in the gym at 7 p.m. putting up 2,000 shots again. And he said that's just the type of person Kobe was. He would never give up. He said, this is the way we're going to do things. This is the way I'm doing things. You never, never, ever let up. And he brought up a story too, which I thought was, it was a light-felt story, and I think a lot of people need to hear this, but and a lot of people need to hear these types of stories about Kobe, because I think this is the way he wants to be, he would want to be celebrated. He talked about how the Team USA team was up 45 points against the Dominican Republic, and Kobe was playing full court press defense against the Dominican Republic in one of their games, and he was going for steals, he was taking full court dunks. He said, and he calls a timeout. Jim Boeheim calls a timeout and goes, Kobe, you know, you can relax. We're up 45. He goes, nope. He's like, they're out there. That's what they're getting. That's what they're getting. They're getting 45 points. They're getting defense for the entire game. And I just, you know, that kind of just embodies who Kobe was as a person throughout his entire career. And just after that is just the never giving up, that willingness to fight, even when you are ahead, like he was in this game. I want to hear more of those stories. And another one, too, I saw that Sean Hyken tweeted out from Grantland. It was it's an off story, too. It's not even about NBA, but it's called The Secret History of Kobe Bryant's Rap Career. It's a great article in Grantland from April 12th, 2013. So anybody who's a huge hip hop fan, you should go back and read this because it's a really interesting story. But Kobe had so many interesting, intricate things about his life outside of basketball that I think should be celebrated as well.
Absolutely. And there's no easy way to try and transition seamlessly here into an ad read, so I'm just going to do it. This spring, follow your favorite baseball teams to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. Amazing weather and landscapes, exciting outdoor adventure, incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for baseball fans. 10 stadiums from 15 different Major League Baseball teams, 75 degree temperatures, and all 10 of those stadiums are in the greater Phoenix area within 50 miles of one another. Meet the players and get the autographs before the games. Not only that, you can check out amazing restaurants and bars nearby, including tons of craft breweries like Four Peaks, Angel Trumpet Ale House, and Goldwater Brewing Company. Enjoy live music from local and national artists. Explore museums featuring everything from native heritage to modern art to musical instruments from around the world. Bring the kids along for spring training because Arizona is a fantastic destination for families. Arizona has tons of stuff for the kids to do and see, like wildlife parks, science museums, aquariums, and dude ranches. Plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. That's visitarizona.com/springtraining. Jordan, you know, just talking about the different ways in which Kobe has been remembered by his competitors, his peers, his teammates, and the if I don't know if you saw it, but Scottie Pippen had a great thread on Twitter today as he continues to try to process this. And it also got me thinking about it when I heard Zach LaVine's comments at this morning's shoot around, saying not only does he wear number 8 partially because, you know, he was such a huge fan of Kobe, and Kobe had such an impact on his youth as he was learning the game of basketball and falling in love with the game of basketball, but that it was like, you know, Zach LaVine made the comparison, kids of the 80s and 90s wanted to be like Mike. His generation, Zach's generation, wanted to be like Kobe. And I know that there's, you know, a significant age gap between the two of us, and I certainly was a Chicago kid of the 90s idolizing Jordan. And because of that, and because Phil Jackson defected and then went to you know, teach and coach and lead a Lakers team with Kobe at the helm of it, I always had this, like, vendetta as a sports fan against Kobe because I felt, you know, cheated and betrayed by Phil Jackson, and I felt threatened that there's this young kid who's going to take the mantle of MJ. But the thing that I think is so fascinating to me that I respect the most is the be like Mike thing. You can say that, and you can, you know, enjoy your Gatorade commercial where, you know, you're drinking Gatorade and you're playing hoops around, you know, playing street ball, and you can, you know, stick your tongue out, wag your tongue out, and you know, everybody wants to be like Mike. Kobe actually did it. He is such a student of the game, always was, and that's why I really enjoyed those series he was doing for ESPN Plus over the last couple of years, breaking down players' games, breaking down offense, breaking down defense. Always a student, always learning more. And it's something that Scotty said in his thread that, you know, Kobe would call him up or talk to him and ask him and pick his brain about defensively how to play specific players certain ways. And it's not just MJ that he emulated. He emulated every best element of the players that came before him that he respected. And just, you know, if you haven't already, it's really remarkable. There are videos on YouTube that you can go watch where they'll put MJ and Kobe video side by side on the same screen. And whether it's like MJ's, you know, turnaround fadeaway jumper or MJ's jab step or the way that MJ could get himself and look in the paint with his footwork. And especially as MJ got older and lost some of his athleticism and evolved his game, especially offensively, you can see Kobe do the exact same thing. He studied MJ's game to a T and added around it other elements of other players' games. But like the reason that be like Kobe or just shouting Kobe when you shoot anything in any direction is the new be like Mike is because the dude put the time and the effort and his passion behind that into actually being like Mike.
I was going to say my generation, I just always remember you brought it up. Anytime you had, you know, a piece of garbage, whatever it is, empty water bottle or, you know, a scrap of paper, you'd crumple it up and you'd get 6-8 feet away from the trash can. You'd lean back and you'd yell Kobe. That was what I remember most about growing up and watching Kobe. Kobe was the icon for me, at least for my generation. I'm the same exact age as Zach LaVine is. So I understand what he was watching. You know, I was alive, but too young to watch Michael Jordan actually play. So for me, the first time to actually watch somebody incredible was Kobe Bryant. I think the other thing, too, to think about with Kobe and thinking about MJ as well and his legacy, I was going back and watching a lot of those games and seeing if I could scrap together an interview from Michael talking about Kobe. And sure enough, there is. It's a sideline interview right after the Bulls played the Lakers, and Michael dropped 36 in that game and Kobe had 33. This was in 1997. And the broadcaster, the very first question he asks Michael Jordan coming off the court is, so what's your evaluation of Kobe? And or what's your evaluation of the young kid Kobe? And Michael says, well, the kid can play. He's got to improve a little bit, but the kid can damn play. And it was funny. He said, did you offer any tips to Kobe? And the one thing he said Kobe asked him during one of the timeouts was how he separates himself from the defender and is able to knock down that kind of fadeaway jumper that Jordan made so classic and we see Kobe do time and time again, the one that you're talking about with the layovers too. I just found that so fascinating that there was a little nugget about them, those two so early on in his career talking about the significant shot Jordan had, and Kobe ended up learning how to do that and sort of made it his own as well. So there's going to be tons of that coming out too, but you know, just scrapping through YouTube, looking up Michael Jordan versus Kobe Bryant highlights, you're going to find a lot of those interviews in there. And it was really cool to hear, you know, Michael Jordan, the player, talking about him on a sideline interview. And this was before any of Kobe's fame, any of his recognition in the NBA. I mean, he was a damn near second-year player with the Lakers. Nobody knew what his career was going to be. But I thought that was pretty special that Kobe, even in a game against one of his heroes, his childhood heroes, the guy he wanted to be like so much, he's asking for in-game tips. He's asking for pointers in his first 2 years in the league from one of the greatest players of all time. That was just a little nugget that I had found from yesterday that I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it speaks to the, you know, the fact that, you know, this league, it's changed, it's evolved. Some have ascended to this legendary status, and there is a passing of the torch. There always will be. You know, whether it was the 80s years that were ruled by Magic and Bird, that were upset for a couple of years by the Bad Boy Pistons, and then the passing of the torch from them to our beloved Bulls, and Kobe taking that torch from MJ and LeBron taking that torch from Kobe, it's always about the little things and the respect for the game itself. And that, I think, is something that will always be true. And it's, you know, you talk about MJ and Scotty seeing a young Kobe play and offering tips, offering advice. You know, MJ always referred to Kobe like his little brother. And then you hear Zach LaVine talking at the Advocate Center earlier today about the first time that he was having a really good game. He happened to be playing against the Lakers at the Staples Center when he was just a 19-year-old kid in the NBA. He was balling. So Kobe took him and started guarding Zach in the fourth quarter of a game where Zach, I think, finished with like 28 points or something. They're at the free throw line, and Kobe says to Zach, like, hey, man, keep going. And for Zach, it was so surreal because, like, he grew up idolizing and worshiping Kobe and studying Kobe's game. And suddenly he's on the floor of the Staples Center in an NBA game, 19 years old. And this legend, this immortal figure, this god, is the one D'ing him up and also giving him advice and telling him, hey, keep going. Like, that's the same thing. And who knows? Like, will Zach LaVine become a player as legendary as Kobe? Almost certainly not, based on his trajectory. But it's the passing of the torch, and it's the passing of the knowledge and the respect for the game, because that will always be bigger than the stars.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, I'm thinking just about the accomplishments that Kobe had throughout his career. And I was watching back to the night that he passed Michael Jordan on the all-time scoring list. And I notice as I'm watching this clip, Thaddeus Young is on the floor during that time. That was 2014, so I don't think he was a rookie at that time. But he was still with the Timberwolves.
And did you hear the other detail from Zach speaking at the Advocate Center today? Zach LaVine committed the foul that put Kobe at the line for his free throws that put him past MJ. How crazy is that?
But I noticed Thaddeus Young there. So, and I know that Casey Johnson had tweeted out earlier that Thaddeus Young had spoke about Kobe for about 3.5 minutes straight. So I'm curious to go back and listen to that when we're able to hear a little bit more of the chunk of quotes of what Thaddeus Young had to say. And I'm sure there's a lot of other Bulls players out there that, you know, were touched by Kobe, whether it was just watching him grow up and being able to emulate that and being able to use that as a pushing point for their careers. But yeah, you can definitely tell Zach LaVine and Thaddeus Young were two players that Kobe was definitely an idol to. And both of these guys had tremendous and unique experiences with Kobe. We were just talking about him passing MJ for third of all time. Thinking about this now, where both these players are playing for this Bulls team, Michael Jordan making his career here, I just find it pretty remarkable. And you know what's weird too is it's just, I don't know, it's just the way life goes, I guess, but it's kind of freaky to me. I don't know, there's no other way to describe it, but you know, LeBron hours before on Saturday night passing Kobe for third all time on the scoring list, and LeBron talking about how Kobe, one of the greats, you know, all of these things talking about Kobe, and then all of a sudden we get the terrible tragic news just hours later after that. So I saw pictures and videos of LeBron too getting on the flight to go to travel, and you could tell he was completely broken. And so it's just those freaky things that happen in life. I don't know, it just it finds a way of happening. And that was weird, just seeing LeBron, a huge accomplishment for not only the NBA and for his career, and then the tragedy that happens and that follows after that. It's one of those things in life that is just weird, and I found it weird that it lined up that way. But yeah, Kobe's experience, and I think his reach across the NBA for the youngest generation, I think, is going to live on. Matt, with the last few minutes here, I wanted to just talk about maybe a little bit of a lighter side to Kobe and what we thought. And I thought it would be interesting because I see a lot of our fans, a lot of Bulls fans, asking us the what if question. And that what if question comes is, what if the Bulls had traded for Kobe? How would have that changed his career? How would have that changed the trajectory of this Bulls team over the course of the last 10 years or so? How things would have been different had he not stayed with the Lakers and maybe come to Chicago? What do you think about that at the time that the Bulls were talking about this? And even Kobe had mentioned in the documentary between him and Shaq, when they did a one-on-one interview together, Kobe was like, yeah, I was looking for houses in Lake Forest at the time. I mean, it was close. I was thinking about coming to Chicago. How do you think that would have changed Chicago as a whole and Bulls basketball and his career ultimately?
It's a good question, and I urge all of our listeners to go find a piece that Casey Johnson wrote today for NBCSportsChicago.com about Kobe's connection to the Bulls. Obviously, idolizing MJ, but beyond that, the fact that there were a couple of close calls, and most notably in 2006, as you mentioned, where he almost became a member of the Bulls. And that had that happened, Kobe has spoken about being ready to embrace that legacy and to carry on the legacy of greatness that is Michael Jordan and the house that Jordan built and this amazing organization. Because like MJ, Kobe had no fear on the court or otherwise, no fear. And while that may be the reason, and it's something that Bulls fans pontificate about, that some of the big stars of today's NBA shy away from playing for the Bulls, if it's a decision that's up to them, is because they are afraid of playing in MJ's shadow, Kobe would not have been. And who knows? If that happened, maybe we're talking about a Bulls team that aren't, you know, that is not six-time champions, but seven or eight. Because Kobe went on to win two more titles in 2009 and 2010. You know, obviously the correct pieces would have been needed to be built around him, but certainly was very much so in his prime in 2006 when that nearly went down. The other part of that to me, and it's something that I've been thinking about over the past 24 hours too, as I contemplate everything about Kobe's life and career and my personal connection to it as a NBA fan, but specifically a Bulls fan, is the fact that, and you know, I already mentioned the young up-and-comer threatening to take MJ's throne, and the fact that as a Bulls fan I was threatened by that, and as a Bulls fan I was hurt that Phil Jackson, after this amazing run, said, all right, I'm going to go teach this Kobe kid now, and I'm going to go, you know, coach in L.A., win titles with the Lakers. All that bugged me as a kid. The other element to it was the fact that at that time, Kobe was just kind of starting to come out of a very ugly part of his life off the court, based on the things that happened in Colorado in 2003 with the sexual assault accusation. And it's, you know, honestly, and I know that they're completely different situations, before anybody jumps down my back about that, but it's the same reason that I still struggle to figure out how I feel about Derrick Rose, because it's a part of who this person is. And right now is a time for mourning and remembrance and appreciating all of the amazing things that Kobe was and Kobe did for the game that we all love. But at that time, you know, Kobe's image was not pristine. People were still trying to figure out what exactly happened and what exactly Kobe was guilty of. So I was torn, and I was honestly kind of relieved when it didn't happen, because it would have forced me, when I was still fairly young, you know, like in 2006, I was like 19, 20 years old. I don't know mentally and emotionally how I would have grappled with that. Because I, you know, here I am 12 years older and I still don't know.
Yeah, I think the thinking about just the legacy of the Bulls too, and the way in which people talk about the 90s Bulls, similar to the way that people talk about the 85 Bears here in Chicago, it would have changed the legacy, I think, of this team. And I think it would have changed the legacy of how my generation feels about the younger stars, that maybe guys that are just now retiring. You know, I think about the Dirk Nowitzkis and I think about the Dwayne Wades, you know, all of those guys I grew up watching, Allen Iverson, all of these stars. And to think about having one of those guys as I'm coming up, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, being a Chicago Bull, I can see the passion and the root of interest in my generation being a lot higher here in Chicago. Because Kobe, like you had said, Kobe still had 5-6 years left of prime Kobe left in him before ultimately injuries kind of caught up with his career. But even after that, still was able to grind it out and have, what, 6 more seasons after his injuries and after the 2 championships he won. So I think it would have changed the perspective of the way fans feel, at least the younger fans feel, about MJ and his legacy, comparing it to Kobe had he played in a Bulls uniform. I feel like there would have been a lot more debate, and maybe it wouldn't be split debate about the two players, but more so my younger generation falling more in love with Kobe, and older generation like yours, Matt, who followed MJ and was able to live through all the success that he had throughout the 90s. I think it would have been unique too, because you think about it, 2 of the 3 best players in NBA history playing on one team in a span of 2 decades would have been almost unheard of. And you think about the way that those two played, Very, very similar types of players, but it ultimately did not happen. And, you know, I'm thinking about it now from a perspective of if I was a Los Angeles Lakers fan, I think the story and the legacy is held better now that he stayed with the Lakers and he was a 20-year vet of the Lakers. It just makes the story that much better for NBA fans. And I think ultimately it makes it that much better. And, you know, it's one of those stories that you'll never forget because he stayed with one team for as long as he did. He was winning all of those championships throughout all of the time in his young career with Shaq, to the turmoil that happened, to turning it around, winning two more championships on his own, proving people wrong. I think it was just, it went the way the NBA, I think, wanted it to go. It went the way that it should have went. And Kobe ultimately staying with the Lakers, I think, was the best thing. And we think about it now, and I mean, if I had to pick a greatest Laker of all time, I think it's Kobe. And that's just me because I watched him. I was able to watch him. And I think of Lakers, the first person I think of is Kobe Bryant. And maybe for older people and older fans of the NBA, think of Magic Johnson or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar
or Will
Chamberlain, any of those guys. Yeah, or Jerry West.
Yeah.
Any of those guys. But to me, somebody says Lakers, the first person I think of is Kobe Bryant.
Yeah. And I don't know if his legacy would diminish had he switched teams and spent the back end of his career with the Bulls and maybe, and you know, a third or a fourth team, because the greats are the greats. Obviously, when you talk about greatness, and it's kind of, it's so tragically ironic, you know, but also beautiful that this, you know, this shocking death happened on the eve of Kobe being forever enshrined into the, you know, the Basketball Hall of Fame, along with other greats like, you know, KG and Tim Duncan, because that those moments is when you hear the resumes, right? X-time All-Star, X-time first, you know, first team All-NBA, X-time NBA MVP, X-time Finals MVP, X-time NBA champion. You hear the resume, you see the resume written out, and that is how often how we debate, you know, who is on that Mount Rushmore? Who are the greatest the game has ever seen? And it's not really about what jersey they were wearing. It's about the people who were best at playing the sport. And it's why, and you know, you touched on the fact that, you know, it's so weird that the night before this happened, LeBron passed Kobe for third all-time on the NBA's all-time scoring list. Right now we're seeing LeBron in the twilight. At least we assume. I mean, if anybody is going to beat Father Time, LeBron's going to give it the best fight. But in the twilight of his career, is now playing for his third different team. And he's won titles with two different teams. That's something that Kobe didn't do. That's something that MJ didn't do. And if LeBron is able to win a title with these Lakers, of course he will never be on, you know, not only the same level, but not even the same piece of paper as Kobe when it comes to talking about, as you were, the greatest Lakers of all time. But it, in a different way, it's also very impressive if that's something that LeBron can accomplish before he retires. All that to say, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, what happens if Kobe actually comes to the Bulls? Is his legacy different? You know, what changes? Kobe was going to be Kobe, and Kobe was going to retire as Kobe, one of the greatest of all time, regardless of what jersey he was
wearing. The whole thing too, and it's going to be interesting to watch over the next year or so, is how people change the way they talk about players now while they're still watching them. You know, I think about the way that all the criticism that LeBron gets from Lakers fans, just because so many say, well, you're not Kobe, you're not Shaq, you're not Jerry West, you're not Wilt Chamberlain, you're not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you're not any of those guys. We hold our players to a high standard, and that was when LeBron initially signed with the Lakers. You know, Lakers fans loved the fact that he did, but it also came with expectation. I'm wondering if that's going to change at all, if the way that people appreciate and hold some of the greatest players of all time that are still playing right now in LeBron, hold them to a different standard and think about the way that we talk and treat those players while they're playing. Think if we change the tone and the way that people talk about them ultimately, just because things can happen so quickly like this. Look at Kobe retired, what, 3, 4, 5 years ago and passes away. So I'm wondering if that at all changes the conversation, the way that fans talk about players currently while they're playing, and also when they go on to retire after that. But that's the one thing that I keep going back to and thinking about is all the criticism that LeBron gets still while he's playing for his own team in the Lakers, from Lakers fans, how that conversation is going to change. And ultimately, I think we're going to hear a lot more stories from different players, former teammates, people that were part of Kobe's life, maybe just outside of basketball too. I think the one thing that I have to leave this off on, though, that makes me truly sad is that this summer was going to be the first summer that Kobe was going to be eligible for the Hall of Fame. And he doesn't get to close that book, per se, on and doesn't get to close that chapter of his life completely by making his Hall of Fame speech and talking about all of the accomplishments that he had throughout his entire career. But I'm sure the teammates, people that he was around, everybody in basketball is going to do their best to make that a really, really incredible moment for Kobe Bryant's fans and for his family. So, but I don't think there's any doubt in anybody's mind that Kobe's going to be unanimously inducted into the Hall of Fame when the summer comes.
Yeah, and in a way, I also look forward to whatever it is that they, and I'm sure that they'll plan something wonderful, but hearing the words of his fellow inductees. You know, players like, you know, Kevin Garnett and Tim Duncan, who, you know, how many playoff series, how many battles between Kobe and his Lakers and Duncan and his Spurs, you know, tremendous respect between competitors. And it's heartbreaking that Kobe won't be there himself to make that Hall of Fame speech. But I know that the other people that are inducted will handle it with nothing but class and grace and an appreciation for a legend that's gone too soon. And that's my final thought, is that it's still so heartbreaking to me that it, and it goes back to what I was saying when we started about Kobe being immortal. One of those people you don't think it's possible for them to ever die because of the legendary status that they have achieved. Larger than life, truly unkillable. The part that makes me the most sad is that we won't see an aging Kobe Bryant sitting courtside of some NBA game or some NBA All-Star weekend. I picture, you know, a white-haired and white-bearded Bill Russell, who has, you know, always been around for these, you know, the greatest moments of the years and decades that followed when he was on the court, and has been this iconic legend, this immortal legend that's always close to the game, not ever too far away. And Kobe is a kind of player you always thought would be that. You know, the twinkle in the eye, you know, the graying hair, sitting there at, you know, age 70, age 80, watching the younger people who learned from him, who he passed the torch to, who still are out there loving the game. And we won't get that version of Kobe. And that's very, very sad.
Any Bulls fans out there, if you can think of a memory, or maybe you're a Kobe Bryant fan, but you're also a Bulls fan, if you can think of any memory of games that you've gone to or any interactions that you've had, maybe you did, maybe you had an interaction with him or something, any memory that comes to light and that you want to share with Bulls fans, you want to share with us, drop those at 331-979-1369. You can text us your story in, you can drop us a voicemail. You can also tweet at us at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Before we get out of here, if you've been listening to this podcast, I'm sure you've heard a lot of our great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans, but you may not know that the Locked On Bulls is a great way for your local visits to reach passionate Chicago Bulls fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Chicago Bulls fans and predominantly male audience, then that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put the company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you. But for Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com